Welcome to the Fangover Podcast, where we romance all things that go bump in the night. I'm Francesca from Under the Covers Book Blog, and I'm joined by
Suzanne, also from Under the Covers Book Blog.
And today we have a special guest with us, and we're so excited to say hello to Nalini Singh, the author of the Side Changeling series, which we've been reading this whole season and we've been fangirling over. Welcome to the Fangover.
I'm so excited to be here and to talk to you both again. Like we were just saying before we started recording, how long it's been since I've actually had a chance to talk to you both. So it's going to be fun.
Can't wait. Can't wait to get all the spoilery news also. We'll see what we can drag out of her. Okay, so actually let's go back a little bit in time, and we wanted to ask you, what was it about the romance genre? When did you fall in love with it? When did you start reading it? And what made you choose to write it?
Well, that's a good question. Let me think about it. So when I started, so I was always a big reader, just from childhood. Like when we moved from Fiji, where I was born, to New Zealand, I was just like, whoa, libraries exist. Like we had libraries in Fiji, but like really small, like book bus. And then there was like one central library, because Fiji is a very small island. I think the entire population is like 800,000 people or something. So just much smaller scale. And so when we moved to Auckland, which is this really sprawling city, and there's libraries everywhere, and you can just go in and take books out, I'm like, oh my God. So I was always a reader, but I think that just pumped it up to the next level, because I had access to so many more books. And at that time I was quite young, so I was, you know, the children's books, basically children's section. And then slowly I got into speculative fiction, so science fiction, fantasy, that kind of thing. I was reading all this adventure stories, you know, Dragons of Pern, love those books, and all of those. And then I think at some point I started to want, so I read a lot of very hard sci-fi as well, but I wanted more of the emotional stuff. But I didn't realize it. Like looking back, I think that's what drew me towards romance. But back then, it was more a case of I stumbled upon these books. And I'm pretty sure it was Mills and Boone, because my aunt, one of my aunts, is a huge, huge, huge reader. And she reads everything, including, you know, romances. And we were visiting and she gave me a bag of books, basically, and in there, and I was like a teenager by then, so there were some Mills and Boones in there, and I think I sort of dove into them, and I thought, this is amazing, I love this. And I think it was that punch of emotion, and I think particularly at that age, I was ready for that, and I was looking for that. But I also always really loved, I still read tons of science fiction and fantasy. So I've always had that love of both. And it took me the longest time to realize you could actually combine them. Like paranormal romance is basically speculative fiction with romance, right? And so once I found that, I was just like, whoa. Why did no one tell me this existed? and I just... So I think when I started, it's Christine Fian, Sherilyn Kenyon, Jane Castle, you know, all of those were probably the closest. And then, and I was just like zooming through them and wow, this thing exists. And yeah. And so, yeah, that's my journey to to romance.
I love that.
No, that's really interesting, because I came to romance through fantasy, because I read I read fantasy almost exclusively, and then I read an urban fantasy which had a little bit of romance in it. So the Kate Daniels series by Ilona Andrews, which is a big love of mine, and I was like, oh, I kind of like the kissing bits. Can I find more of this?
Which, I think kind of the same thing happened to me. I used to read exclusively thrillers when I was little, when I was a kid. And then I found urban fantasy, and that was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And that was like my thing. And like you, Suzanne, I kept like gravitating towards those like kisses or like the sexual tension between some of the characters, and sort of naturally I ended up in paranormal romance, which is like my, it's the sweet spot.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Love, if you come in from the fantasy side, that's the best entry drag.
Yes.
Especially because they're making a really big generalization. But before I started reading like Kate Daniels and Alona Andrews, almost exclusively every single author I'd ever read was male as well.
Oh, interesting.
And so that was a massive shift. And I do think, and I don't know if I should say this, but like from someone who went from almost all male to like almost all female, like I do feel like you can tell.
Yeah, I don't know. I can tell usually.
Just because I went from one to the other, it's like it was massively in contrast. So
yeah. So, I've been able to like pinpoint it even with the romantic suspense that I read a couple of years back, and I didn't know it was a male because it was a pen name, like one of those where it's like
the
initials. Yeah, so I had no idea that it was a male author, and I read it and I'm like, something is different about the connection, like the emotion, like something is different here, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And then like a year after, it was like known that that was a male author, and I'm like, that's what it was. I gotta know.
Yeah, I don't know if I've consciously figured that out, but I do. If you look at my bookshelves, it's majority probably women, female authors. Though I think I tend to read few more men in thrillers, maybe just because there's probably a lot more of them in there. I don't know if that's just my bias from who I read. But you're right. There are differences. There are definite differences that you pick up if you read a lot. Yeah, the styles are different.
Yeah.
And how I think emotion is the approach to emotion. Is quite often different.
Yeah.
But then you do have the authors who you would never tell. Like you could not guess the gender at all.
Yeah.
And the name's gone out of my head. But there were some big romance authors, I think in the 80s, that were men writing under females, you know, pseudonyms, and had no clue. Yeah. No idea at all.
Yeah. Well, even you just mentioned Kate Daniels. That's a husband and wife.
And a wife tour. Team. So
that's true.
And you really can't tell with them at all. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how they write. I don't know like how they split up their duties, but like there's definitely female influence in there. It's not that it's but any particular one is bad, but like males see the world in a different lens because they're differently to females. Of course they're gonna write differently.
Yeah.
So it would make sense. So you said you used to read a lot of sci-fi. So is that kind of how the Psy Changeling ended up having like that sci-fi edge? Because there aren't that many kind of paranormal romances that are set like in the future.
Or I think probably
element to them.
Yeah, I think it probably had a big influence on it. I'll tell you what really had a bigger influence on it was that I was obsessed with telepathy, and I still am. I think it would be amazing to be like, you know, have those mental abilities. And when I was 14, I think I did a science fair project on psychic abilities. Yes, my science teacher was thrilled. But I took it dead seriously. I did all this research, and I went back to so I think it was after World War II, there's a lot of research done on like serious research done on psychic abilities. And so I did all of that, and I made my friends do that test, you know, with the cards on the other side, and you know, which card am I holding, and I had all my research findings and stuff. But I was just, it's not just telepathy. I'm fascinated by the human mind and the possibilities of it and what we might evolve into. And so I think that fed into it, and my love of science fiction. And the story I wanted to tell with the Psy Changelings, I wanted it removed from our timeline. Like I wanted it slightly in the future, but not so far in the future that it becomes not relatable. So it mm-hmm. wasn't, I didn't want this particular story. It wouldn't have worked if we put it into spaceships, for example, because it's got this core that's quite raw to mm-hmm. it. So it had to be close to our timeline, but just not within it. Yeah. And it just felt really natural to when I started writing. I was like, okay, 2079 is far away, but it's not so far away that you can't imagine reaching it. But I think my love of science fiction definitely comes through in my work.
Oh, definitely, yes. Yeah. And actually, something that I wanted to ask you is world building, which kind of ties into this. Your world building is always so, so good in any series you write. I mean, Psy Changeling or the Guild Hunter series. And like, you do it with such an ease. Does that come natural to you, or is that something like you have to work on?
I build worlds in my head all the time. Like, I've been doing it since I was a child, and I thought it was completely normal. So that was my existence. If I had to be at a boring place, you know, with your parents take you to some boring adult thing, you sit there and with my sister, and I was just never bored. I could always make up stuff for us, you know? And it is a kind of a natural part of who I am as a storyteller, I think. Yeah. And in terms of actually putting it on the page, I'll go back a little bit. And I think I learned great world building from all the world builders I read, you know, growing up, science fiction, mm-hmm. fantasy. And at the time, it was unconscious. I wasn't realizing that I was learning. But looking back, I know that the worlds that worked best for me were the ones that just felt immersive. Like, you mm-hmm. could literally step into it and it exists.
Yes.
Like, I can imagine Pern, you know, from Anne McCaffrey's books. I can imagine being on spaceships from the hard SF books I was reading, or being a scientist in a lab coming up with a genetic experiment, whatever the world was. And so when I began to write, I think subconsciously I always had that in my mind, that I want it to be immersive. And I also think it helps how I write, because I don't sit down and build the world and then write it, because doesn't feel natural. Like, it feels like I'm trying to combine pieces, whereas I just look through the eyes of the characters and we see what they see, we know what they know. Mm-hmm. And that way it feels much more realistic to me. So mm-hmm. you don't see everything at once. The whole world doesn't have to exist for you. It only has to exist in the pocket in which this character exists and what they know. And that also allows a lot of growth, because we obviously, like, for example, the three of us are in different pockets of planet Earth, and we each have our lives. We each have people we know. And so there's all these connections and they all go in different directions. And that's how I tend to approach world building as well. So, for example, Caleb Krychek's world is not the same as Thames and Ryder's world, you know?
Yeah.
It's just completely, they exist in the same world, but completely different facets of it. So I love that. I love doing it like that. I love learning the world with my characters.
Mm.
And there's a little bit of obsession involved also, I should admit. this comes into play at the end when I do all my continuity checks, because for a world to hang cohesively together, all the pieces have to fit from book to book to book. Yeah. And that's really important to me. That doesn't mean I never make mistakes, but it means I try really, really hard not to make mistakes. Yeah. And that can mean triple checking, quadruple checking to make sure all the little details are correct. Yeah.
And you can definitely pick up on the little details, like, oh, look, this is tying into that, or like, we saw this one meeting and now it makes sense why it happened.
I can say that if we're obsessed with it, it's good that the author is too.
Yes.
I always get so excited when someone picks up an Easter egg because it's like, someone cares. That it's yeah. hours, what it is.
Yes.
Oh, no. I love that. I love reading back. So, because I've reread this series like a few times, and because there's so many, you kind of forget. And I love reading back mm-hmm. from like book one and like picking up stuff.
Yeah.
That like has relevance further on, but I just forgot that it was like mentioned like way back when. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that I think when you're doing that, like it's a great series to reread, because when you, because you're noticing new things, so it always feels slightly like fresh.
Yes.
Yeah, so I love that. It has really good rereadability.
Oh, I like to hear that, because I reread my favorite, you know, series as well. And yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, when you feel like you're discovering something new in a book that you already know, it's really fun. And to make those connections, and
And
that definitely happens with your books, for sure.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah, I get very excited reading again, like seeing all my favorite characters again, and like.
Yeah. As we've been rereading for the podcast, it's like we get so excited, like, oh, this book's coming up. And then we read and like, oh my God, I didn't realize like this happened. And look, we just picked up this thing, or we get so excited for this one scene that for sure we remember. And we're like, oh, so giddy.
And then there's always like a novella that you can then look in and see like the background. And I love that. Yeah. I love the whole. Yeah. When you said it was immersive, like your world definitely feels like you could really.
It does.
Dive right into it.
Yeah.
Although at the moment we're just like Francesca's just really excited counting down to reading Caleb's book.
It's the next book I'm gonna reread, so that's why when you mentioned Caleb I'm like, oh my God.
No, I mean, like, see, I like Caleb,
but he's my favorite. I'm sorry.
Vasix is my favorite book.
You like the quiet ones.
Yeah, he's so quiet and protective, and he's got a metal arm. Well, never mind, I won't carry on, but like, And there's a little dog in it as well. I'm just like, oh, he's so cute. He's not only kind to children, he's kind to dogs. And
I have a little fact about that book. So I don't always have, so, you know, I know authors have playlists. I don't always have a playlist for a book.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just have a single song that I listen to on repeat thousands of times on headphones. So I don't drive everyone else insane. But anyway, with The Shield of Winter, it was Halo by Beyonce. And when you said protective, and I thought, you know, like that's the feel of that book. It's that sense of protectiveness, and it's the sense of emotion in it as well. I think it just really worked for me when I was writing the book, that sense that someone is the light, and him, you know, that's it's Ivy. So
see, I like that. See, I love the romance, obviously, between Ivy and Vasic, but I also really like the bromance between Aiden and Vasic. So that, like, I know that arrows are meant to be like islands, but most people aren't really. So it's nice to see other relationships blossom as well when you're.
Yeah.
They're normally my favorite ones, which is why Side Changeling is good, because they're normally, people are normally living in tribes within each of your books, and you get to see that tribe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to
future books.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say, I also really like relationships in general. I like writing relationships, not just a romantic relationship. I like writing like familial relationships, friend relationships, even the enemy relationships. You know, I like writing all different kinds of bonds that people can have with other people. I find that really interesting. And yeah, and I like, that's why my worlds tend to just sprawl after a while, because I keep finding more relationships to explore.
Cute. Like for example, when we got like so excited with the connection in the first book with Sasha and the pups, you know, like even that little detail, it does bring out like all the family vibes and the unity. So it really comes across.
Well, it's also nice because they're fighting for something in these books, yeah. But it's nice to see what they're fighting for apart from yeah. That one relationship that's developed. So,
yeah.
Nice.
So if you were a character in the books, would you be a Psy or a changeling?
Or a human, so or would you remain
human? Or human, yeah.
I'm always torn between.
I'm gonna lean to a Psy because you like telepathy. Yeah.
Well, I also want to fly, so okay. So I'm like, I could be a teleporter because then I could go anywhere I wanted, which I think is super yeah. amazing.
Yeah,
but then I could also be like an eagle changeling, and then I could yeah. fly. Mm-hmm. So that's a tough one. Yeah. I know I could be like a hybrid, you know, I would be an eagle changeling with teleportation powers. Now I need to write that could be my fulfillment.
There you go. Yeah. Which it's kind of like I know that Suzanne wanted to know about the next generation.
Yeah,
that could come from that.
So I changed in the next generation. So it's Star Trek vibes.
I was gonna say.
But like, I think it's because I really like Kit and John, and obviously like all the little babies, like Marley yeah. and Ben, and like feels wrong because they're so young. Apart from maybe Kit and John, but it's like, oh, I want to see them all grown up.
Yeah,
so, yeah. yeah. The problem is that if you grow them up, the timeline of the series is quite tight. Mm. Like the timeline of things that are happening in the world, and it doesn't make logical sense for there to be a gap of say like 2 years.
Yeah.
Because catastrophic things could have happened in that period of time.
Right.
So
right.
There's that in terms of the overall plot. And then the other thing is that when you age up younger characters, you age up everybody. And mm-hmm. so are we ready to age up everybody? So I think it's going to be natural process of time, how things move in the world. It's just so yeah, the real littlies are going to be little for a while. But I think Kit is a possibility, because Kit is actually he's a full grown adult, but he's just a very young adult. And I think mm-hmm. in particular with Kit, what we know about him, sort of what he's destined for, he needs a bit more maturity on him before he can sort of take all that on board. And I love that he's just wandering around and he pops up here and there and you're like, hey, I know who that is. Yeah. What's he doing, you know, on the ocean or so yeah, that's actually quite fun to write as well. Like, so when I write these books, even though we might not see all the characters, they continue to exist for me. They continue to exist in their own timelines. And so sometimes it's nice to cross when the timelines cross with the series, with the book I'm writing.
Yeah.
And we get to see those glimpses. But
And this
book, that's the next book, you will see the cubs again, the Roman and Julian. So there
you go. It's been love so that. Cute to watch them grow up.
Yeah.
I have like a full-on chart of all the birth dates of all the kids. Oh. So I can make sure that they're at the correct age, because otherwise it's just, I don't even remember my own birthday.
Yeah. No, I can imagine you'd have to do it. You've got so many characters.
It's a lot, yeah.
Have yeah, to have yeah, their timelines so you can make everything align. So yeah, I did have a question. So you mentioned that you liked the bird changelings, but we haven't yet had a main character as a bird, a bird changeling. So is that gonna crop up at any point?
Yes. I have always intended to write a bird changeling in this arc of the series.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And the bears just decided to push to the front of the line.
Oh my god.
So we love the bears.
So sometimes my plans are in ruins at my feet, but I still want to write. I still intend to write one of the falcons. So yeah, it will happen. I just need to work around the bears.
I love the bears.
Like, I love the bears so much. I'm not complaining.
No, me neither. No, they're just so like charismatic and adorable. Yeah,
they're really fun to write. They are really fun to write. It's kind of interesting because in this book we're going to go back into San Francisco. So it's the tone of the two different packs is quite interesting, and obviously I love them all.
Yeah,
but it's just interesting because they are very much. They're bears and these are cats, and it's just completely different. And but there's these similarities that keep cropping up, which is also fun to explore.
Yeah. I like that each of the packs have their own identity. The wolves are different as well, again.
I really like that because I do a lot of research actually into the animal when I'm writing the changelings. And then I have to blend it with the human side of things. So obviously with cats, they're actually not that sociable, right, in the wild. But humans are very social creatures. And so you get the leopards who have their eyries, so they're not living in a big den like the bears or the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still very much a united group as opposed to a leopard in the wild. So, yeah, it's fun. It's fun to really think about those things and how would you be as a changeling if you had the human side as well as the animal side? Yeah.
Mm. So will the rainfire pack appear as well? Sorry, I just got a list of all the different things. Like, will they appear?
yeah, they're also on my list to appear. Yes, I have a really long list also.
Yeah,
and sometimes okay, so I have to be really strict because. It's so easy to go off on tangents. I could just write about, like, we could just spend days in the packs. I just write about what they do in their packs.
Yeah.
Like, this is the book this time, people. It's just what they're going to do in the pack today. So to keep the series, you know, the momentum of the series, it has to be the book of whoever at that point of time is at the critical point in the timeline of the plot.
Yeah,
the overarching plot line. So I always like the characters are always there in my head, and then I know at who's there at which point. And so sometimes I can't tell you exactly when someone's book is going to be, but I know when we reach that point in time, mm-hmm. that's when it's going to happen. So there's a lot of flexibility in that. So while I have the overarching plot line, I always know where we're going.
Mm.
So you can trust me. I will not lead you off a cliff. I'm super open to which character steps into the space because it has to be the character who has the right skills, the right abilities, or is in the right place at the right time mm-hmm. for this yeah. part of the story to take place. So, and that keeps it really interesting for me too. I don't function well if I've got a huge plan of like, this is what's going to happen and this is who it's going to be. Mm. I like the slight craziness of just jumping in and, okay, oh, wow, did not expect you. Okay, let's go.
Okay. That's good that we're collecting all these characters because it means that there are lots more books coming.
Yeah.
And I feel like I could read The Side Changeling and
forever
Trinity like forever. Yeah. But not that I want like everyone the world to be in disaster like at all times. Like the Psy are constantly on this apocalyptic edge or anything. But like I want them to be happy, but I just want to read about them as well.
Yeah. I mean when they're all happy, the series ends. So
yeah. There's got to be some drama. So do you know how many books you have planned for this part of the series?
No, I never do, actually. I never know how many books it'll take to get to the point I want to get us to. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling it might be a bit shorter than the first arc because the first arc was 15.
Yeah.
And... yeah, my feeling is that this arc will be shorter, and then we go on to, because the end of each arc is like a beginning of the next one, we mm-hmm. bounce.
Yeah.
And so I feel like we're getting to something quite catastrophic, so yeah. We'll see after then.
Yeah, it's like in last, well, spoilers, guys, if you don't want to hear about Last Guard, skip ahead. But sorry, Francesca, I don't think you've had, don't, can't remember if you've had the chance.
I didn't read that. No, I didn't read that one yet. It's okay.
Plug your ears. So there were points in that book, and I'm like, oh my God, everyone's going to die in a minute. Like, I was like, they're not going to be able to fix this. They're all going to die. What is As long as San Francisco and Russia are okay, though, I don't know anyone else. So, but it got to that point. I was like, oh, no, they're not going to be able to do anything. So that was exciting to read about, I have to say.
Oh, good. I see you did it very well without spoiling.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I'm totally fine with that.
I was going to say, it was actually really... really interesting to go back and explore the anchors in that book, because I always knew, I always knew we would get to that point, but I didn't know when until we hit that book. And so it was really nice to get under their skin, because they've existed from the very first book, but we basically knew nothing about them really. And so it was really nice to go in and go really in depth and find out.
Because it was interesting, because like the rest of the Psy race, I'd never really thought about the anchors, even though when you logically think about it, you're like, well, of course they're really important, you've already told us that, but it doesn't quite connect until you put it into the book. And I thought that was really great. So when I go back and reread it again and it mentions anchors, there'll be that moment again of like seeing the connecting book through new eyes again. So that was really cool. I really enjoyed that. That's a bit of a spoiler. It's about the anchors, Francesca.
That's okay.
It's okay. I mean, it's gotten to the point that I don't read the blurbs at all. I just know I'm going to read the book. So it's like, I don't even bother.
I'm going to be honest. I don't read any of the blurbs for your books either. I just start reading it.
Yeah. It's going automatically on my to read list. So whatever it is, we trust you.
Across all your series, like it's just auto pre-order, whatever. Just get it and read it.
That's it.
Never disappoint.
It's gonna be good. Doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
Although
you guys are
making
my morning here.
Although, not that anybody wants to like pick what comes next, but our readers did ask if there's gonna be more Ilium and Eowyn in the future.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So the funny thing is, every time I start to talk about this, I literally have to shut myself up because I want to say something, but it's like a massive, massive spoiler. So I'll just, yes.
That okay.
Yes. Yeah.
That sounded like good enough. Yeah. That sounds promising.
Yeah. As long as they're there.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm 80% through Archangel's Light at the moment. So I'm like, I had a migraine last week, and one of the bad things about my migraine is I can't read. And I was like, so I had to put it on hold. And I was like, oh, God's sake, ruining my life in all ways.
So speaking of book boyfriends of different people, what are three of your top book boyfriends, obviously, that you haven't written? Because I know it's a little bit difficult for authors to pick from their own characters,
but if you want to
Wow, that's, you know what, no one has ever before asked me that question, so I've never actually thought about it.
That's the most important question.
I know, now you've like frozen me. I might have to come back to you on that, because I'm like running in my mind through all the books I've read, and I was like, Who is it?
I mean, I think about all the time even when I'm not asked.
Yeah. I'm literally like, okay, should I move him up one or put him down?
It's like a, it's like a league
where's my
table.
Order today? Yeah. Well, I can tell you that on my league table right now, I have Vlad from Janine Frost's Night Prince series as my number one at the moment. Caleb being number two, and
he won't like being number two.
I know, but you know, yeah, he was higher up, but you know, Vlad, after I finished like that series, put him down a peg. And then number three, it's like sometimes it changes, but I think my mood at the moment is John Matthew from the BDB.
Oh, interesting.
John Matthew is always in your top five.
Yeah. I mean, he might move up or down, you know, same thing with Vlad. He might be first now and then he might go down to number two. He also wouldn't like that.
So my number one is Curran, from, I was thinking of Dragon Age Inquisition and my romance in that is Curran if anyone plays video games. But Curran from Kate Daniels' series by Elena Andrews. Is obviously
my
obsession is Francesca Morno.
Oh yeah.
And then of course there's Basic, and I'm always surprised it's a Psy because I always feel like I like changelings more, but it's always like Basic.
Same thing for me. I love the changelings, but it's always Caleb.
Yeah. And then
there's something there.
Yeah,
and Charles from the Alpha and Omega series by.
Oh yeah, he's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got one for you. I've got one for you. So I've been sitting here while you've been talking. Yeah. This is so interesting that I've never done this before ever in my whole life. Julie Garwood. What's the title? It's got Grace in it. I love the book, and the title's gone out of my head. But it's one of her big Scottish led heroes, and I
is
just
it Saving Grace.
Yes, Saving Grace. Yeah. Okay. I remember him because I think because her books, she always had the big protective hero as well. Like because at the time when she was writing, there was a trend of like really cruel heroes.
Yeah.
But her books, her historicals always had the hero who was kind. Who kind of, you know, he was gruff on the outside, but it's that whole sort of gruff but actually secretly soft for the heroine. And I love that.
Yeah.
And another one I really enjoy, I'm going back. I'm trying to see, these are the ones I really remember. So I'm like, okay, they've stuck in my mind for a reason. And another is Jane Anne Krentz, and it's Pretty Sure It's Sebastian. I think it's one of those one word titles. I think it might be Scandal, but she like corners him in his den. He's kind of like this dark, brooding character, and then she turns up on the door like, don't kill my brother in a duel, my stupid brother that's challenged you to a duel kind of thing. And it's again, it's that whole sort of gruff. And like he's not gruff, he's more sort of that cold, sophisticated, but actually you can tell that really he's into her, which I really like. And I've got an unusual one for you. It's a science fiction one, and the interesting thing is that this character doesn't have a gender, but I find the character so interesting, like I would just love to talk to them. Murderbot. I just find Martha Wells' writing of Murderbot so fascinating, I really have to read those books again, because when I read them, they're the best kind of book for me, which is I'm completely immersed. So that for me is the test of a really good book, where I'm not a writer, I'm a reader, I'm fully into the story. So it's only when I look back consciously that I realize the things that she does in those books that makes it such an interesting character to read. Like for the longest time I didn't realize that Murderbot actually has no gender. It's so well written, and so you create kind of agenda for them in your head, which says things about how we view things and, you know, our personal biases and what we expect a murderbot to be, kind of thing. And
did you go for masculine gender? Because I did
at first, you know, I was like, oh yeah, but then I was like, hold on, why? why am I so yeah, that's why I said I need to read those books like all over again, just to look at it with a writer's eye, just because I'm fascinated by it. But I think the character itself, I think of book boyfriend not just as in like a fun book boyfriend, but also like someone that you just want to spend time with, right? Mm-hmm. Like someone you would be like, they would be the coolest, most interesting person to hang around. So yeah, yeah. I would love to meet Murderbot.
Love that.
Yeah, they're great, those books. They're really interesting. Yeah. But not in an interesting bad way, in an interesting in a good way.
yeah, it was, they're hard to describe, isn't it? It's because but everyone I've recommended it to, even if they're not big science fiction readers, they really enjoyed them.
Yeah, they're good. Yeah. They're short as well, but it doesn't feel like a novella. I don't know, you're right, it's hard to, they're like 130 pages or something, or at least the first one is. But it feels big. It feels so big.
Yeah. Yes. It's again that big immersive world.
Yeah.
Even though we're getting bites of it. So yeah. And now I'm gonna sit here for the rest of the day and think of all my other book boyfriends. And I'll send you a list of like 200.
That's awesome.
Because I'll be like, oh, I didn't mention this person. Oh, I didn't mention this person. Anyway.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. That's same thing we do all the time. It's like, oh, you know, there's so many.
Yeah. That's the fun thing, isn't it?
Yeah. You can't help it after like so long reading romance. I just naturally be like, would I want him as my boyfriend? Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Yeah. Or it's like somebody like you just said, somebody that you just want to hang out with, you know?
Oh yeah. Which book was it? And I said I want them to be my neighbors. It was Max and Sophia.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yes. The best neighbors.
Oh, I meant
yes.
I think that episode is me just talking about how I want them to be my next
half of the episode was her talking about like I just want them to come over for like dinner and I'll go over to their house.
Which is you guys should start a trend of book friends. These are the book people I friends. Want to be my friends.
Yeah, yeah,
in real
yeah.
life. Yeah.
We'll have just like dinner parties and
it turned into like a full-blown fantasy about what it wasn't helped by the fact that day my neighbors had been making a lot of noise. And I was like, oh, if Max and Sophia were next door, they would be
that would be much better. Yeah,
they would be amazing.
That's so funny. Didn't you make a cover? I think you
I did.
Really? I think I saw it. I'm sure. Yeah. Did you tag me on it? Yes.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. That's funny.
Okay. So I did have another question about your thriller books, which I've really enjoyed, especially your latest one, which, sorry, I've completely forgotten what it's called now.
Quiet in Her Bones.
Yeah. Which had me guessing. So Francesca read it for me and I spent the entire book like texting Francesca all my theories about like what I thought was happening. Which was amazing. I love it when a book does that. So what made you kind of split off into the thriller genre?
So I actually have always for a long time read a lot of thrillers as well. And suspense and mystery, you know, that whole sort of gamut. And I don't know, actually. I think it was, I would put it back to New Zealand's landscape. Like I was traveling through and I just found myself thinking, you know, if you had to get rid of a body.
Yeah. Hey,
the New Zealand bush is like, the best possible place, because it's not like like a forest in Europe where you have all these trees and lots of spaces in between. Here it's very sort of primeval. It's all very tangled, a lot of undergrowth, and you kind of have to, like, if you're doing tramping or, you know, hiking through the bush, you've got to hack your way through, basically. It's quite it's old forests, you know, really but in a different way, you know, just because of where we are in the environment. But yeah, I remember sitting on a bus. I was on a bus for some reason in the South Island, and in a quite a remote part of the South Island, and this girl jumped off the bus at the start of a trail, and she was a backpacker, and I could see the trail. So it wasn't an official stop, but the bus drivers are quite nice there, so if you ask them, they'll just stop. And she jumped off, and I saw her disappearing basically down this trail. So it was just the trailhead, and she was disappearing off into the darkness of the forest. And I was just struck by that, like this lone woman disappearing off into nothingness, basically, because it's a very remote area. I would be very surprised if there were any other hikers in the vicinity. Like, after our bus passed and she left the road, that was it, you know, like she could vanish and who would know? And I think that image stuck with me and kind of, and then I just decided to write something with it. And it came out as A Madness of Sunshine, which was my first thriller. It just went from there. I actually wrote the whole book. Like, normally these days, you know, we go to contract for me on like three chapters, or with the series, it's just a conversation usually, you know, with my editor. But with this book, I wanted to write the whole thing because it was the first time I was trying to write something, and I didn't want any pressure. I didn't want to sell a book and people think automatically what it was going to be because of who I am as a writer. I just wanted it to be its own thing, and it would come out as it came out. And interestingly, it's the same way I wrote Slave to Sensation. Slave to Sensation was a full-length book when my agent sent it out to editors. So it wasn't a proposal, it was an idea, because at that time I was writing short contemporary romances for Silhouette Desire. So again, I didn't want any preconceptions. I wanted it to be what it was. And so, yeah, I felt the same way with The Mystery because it was such a departure. And then it turned into what it was. And I thought, oh, I love it. And I sent it I do this to my poor agent all the time. I'm like, I wrote something. Yeah. It's not a paranormal. So... she was fantastic, and you know, my publishers have been fantastic, and I really appreciated readers giving it a go because I know it is so different from what they expect from me. And I think A Madness was probably a bit more accessible than Quiet in Her Bones, so if you liked Madness, you're more likely to write like Quiet in Her Bones, because I think Quiet in Her Bones is quite a departure because there's nothing of romance in it at all.
No,
whereas Madness of Sunshine has that small thread of it throughout.
I mean, I liked both, but I preferred Quiet in Her Bones. I don't know why. I think it's just because of how it kept me guessing like throughout, and I got it wrong about who it was.
By the way,
because who did I think it was? Like, I wanted it to be him for some reason. I wanted it, but it was, I should probably not, this is like spoilers, I'm not gonna say anymore in case no one's read it.
Don't spoil this one.
Yeah, but no, it kept me guessing, and when at the end, when the reveal was revealed, I was like, oh yeah. So I loved that.
I also didn't guess it.
It was an interesting book to write, just because it's the first book I wrote with a first person narrator as well. Just what's going on there. I won't spoil it, but it was just interesting navigating that. And
I love that.
So I have to talk about it.
Yeah. No, I loved it because you had this unreliable narrator and you're like, well, obviously we're seeing everything through him, but like, how much do we really trust him? Like,
right.
right. how much should he really trust him? Like, it was just really tense mm-hmm. and amazing. I really liked yeah. that slightly claustrophobic like setup. I thought it was really good.
Yeah
it was fun to read, fun to pester Francesca. And we're in different time different time zones as well, so it didn't really matter what time it was. I would text her anyway.
I was sleeping, I would wake up and there's all her theories and I'm like, I'm not telling you.
It's like, no, don't. Yeah, I was like, tell me. I was like, no, don't tell me.
Yeah. So what about contemporaries? Are you planning anytime soon?
I've almost finished writing Danny's book. So it's the final one in the Bishop Becerra.
Nice.
Quartet. Is it quartet? Yeah. Have I lost track? Yeah. Yeah. So that should be coming out sometime next year. I haven't really announced a date because I have to work on that around all my other stuff. So I didn't want to promise something and then not deliver, but it's basically finished now. So I'll be going off to edit in December. And then, hopefully in the first quarter of 2022, it should be out. It's definitely going to be in the first half, so for sure. And I'm excited. And we already have the cover photo because it was shot at the same time as the cover photo for the previous book, his brother's book.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
So I decided just to get the shoot done. So I actually already have the cover image, which will also, it'd be nice to actually finally see the cover. And so that's for sure definitely coming out. And after that, I haven't thought about it right now. Just leaving it open for the moment, and we'll see what happens. And also I want to write another thriller, so then it's balancing the time for that. And so I like having all these options for different things that I can do. I think it's, for me as a writer, it's really interesting to do. It keeps the fun. Like, I love my series, but part of the reason I love them is because I do give myself those breaks as well. So I go away and then I come back and I'm super excited because my brain's had that time to think about what's going on in the series. And then I can just jump in and I'm so excited. But it's good to have those, doing something completely different and then come back and
And
so let's put you on the spot. Do you have a favorite Bishop brother?
My favorite Bishop brother. It has to be the one I'm currently writing for. It's always the one I'm currently writing. Danny's adorable. He's pretty wonderful. I love them all, actually. I love that entire family. I love how they interconnect and that they're there for each other. And And this is a completely serious answer. Like, it's my favorite hero is always the one I'm writing because I'm so into them, and I'm seeing through the heroine's eyes as well, and she's falling in love with him and vice versa. And so
fallen in love with them. Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. And
that's why they come across so good.
I should fall in love with them. If I don't, how can I expect the reader or the other protagonist, you know, to fall in love with them? So
So your book boyfriends are just all the characters that you've
read. Exactly.
Forevermore.
Yeah.
Forevermore.
So do you have any favorite books that you've read this year?
This year, let me think. I had a bit of a disrupted reading year, and I think it was because of everything that's going on. So I've read in fits and starts. I'm trying to think what really, really stuck. I did really enjoy Lucy Parker's Battle Royal. I thought that was really fun. And I like that she writes these grumpy characters.
I was going to say, all I can think of is grumpy hero. Yeah,
grumpy love that. I like her grumpy heroes.
Yeah.
And What else? See, I've actually got a list, and you guys give me 1 second. I'm going to look up my list, but this is what
okay.
I love that. Like,
is this a list of your favorites or the list of the books you've read?
I've got a list of all the books I read. So I started keeping it because I wanted to do like basically this. I wanted to remember the books that I loved give them shout outs and stuff. But I found that my brain is like, let me see. I've been into Vivian Chien's Noodle Shop Mysteries. They're like cozy mysteries.
Cozy mysteries, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're really fun. I like them. Sharon Lee and Steve Miller, science fiction. So the Liarden series, if you haven't read that, Suzanne, you have to read them. They're amazing. So I read a few of their novellas this year that I had somehow missed because they do novellas in between their... And so that was wonderful. It was like finding like
a
piece of chocolate you'd forgotten you had.
Yeah.
So I love that. And what else have I got on here? And I've actually been rereading or re-listening to the J.D. Robb books. I've never listened to them. I've always, I've read them.
Yeah.
And so I decided to, and I think particularly because I was having a bit of a disrupted reading year where I was finding difficult to get into things, I had to go back to rereading, which I often find is what gets me back into my reading. Yeah. And I thought, why don't I try the audiobooks? And so now I'm like, I think I'm like 6 or 7 audiobooks in. So I break them up now. I'm back into reading. So,
yeah.
But it's been really interesting to go back to see who the characters were at the start, and not just Even Rourke, but all the characters, Peabody, and just the entire cast, and how that's changed, and how like Mavis, who Mavis was, and who Mavis is in the latest book.
Yeah.
And it's just, so that's been really, really fun. And I don't know how many I've already bought. So there was this big sale and I bought like, I don't know, 20 or 30 of the books. So I'm slowly going through them, and it's fun. It's really, really fun.
Yeah. I've done that this year. I'd forgotten how dark, like, because I'd most recently read book 50 odd and she's relatively happy, right? And then you go back to book one and this really lonely, sad, damaged existence, and I forget how dark that the beginning of the series actually was. And like how close to the edge, like, like Eve was. I just completely forgot because she slowly, as the series gone on, got happier and happier and like
right? And it's say it like that. Yeah. There are some very dark stories actually in the beginning. Especially the first book is very dark. In terms of the crime and
how it mirrored her own experiences, and it's like, whoa, that's a lot. And then
there's a few books at the beginning where she's experiencing, like, through the crime, she's like reliving her horrible, horrible past experiences. So yeah, it can get pretty, pretty rough. But I mean, we're both massive fans of the series too. So
love it.
Love it.
There's another book I've just seen that I want to mention. Hannah Khan Carries On by Uzma Jalaluddin. That I thought that was wonderful. Yeah. Yes. I thought that was wonderful. Yeah.
I also loved her first one, Aisha at Last. Did you read that one?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That was also really good.
That one, it's quite interesting actually. She's got a very different tone in both those books, hasn't she? I really enjoyed them both. And I think for my mood this year, Hannah Khan was just perfect. Because Aisha is much more intense, I think. It's just a little bit darker, I would say.
This has more
of a lightness to it. But she's a wonderful writer, and I'm excited to see where she's, what she's gonna do next.
Same.
I haven't read those. I just like the covers. So I think I might have
beautiful covers.
I think I might have Aisha at Last on my bookshelf. and there it is looking pretty. But it's stupid.
Don't worry, we've all done it.
Yeah.
Because it's paperback though, I know I'll never read it because I don't like to read in paperback form. So
oh really?
No, I like to have, I like to see them. But like I just find it easier to read on a Kindle, especially because you can change the lighting and I can make the background dark and the writing white, which I find easier. So like I find it a much better experience.
Yeah,
it's quite funny. So I read across everything. I'm completely, as long as I can read, I'm not fast. Yeah. But if I had a choice, I tend to go towards print. And I think it's because my theory is that I spend so much time on a computer that for me to shut off, to really relax, I really like the print experience. And
But that makes sense.
Yeah. And I've also gotten into audio.
But
I definitely still like the latest book I read on it was electronic, but I find that when it's a book that I'm really super excited to look forward to, I'll actually wait for it to arrive in New Zealand in the print edition. Like right now my local bookseller just told me she's got the newest Jane Castle in Guild Boss. It's like the hardcover and I'm all excited and I'm gonna be sitting up curled up with it, but I like the options, you know. I do like the options. I think about when I used to pack to travel years ago and half my suitcase was books.
yeah.
And now you can just have it on your phone or whatever device you're reading, and it's you get endless books. Yeah. I remember jumping. So I did Amtrak from San Francisco to New York at one point. And I remember jumping off the Amtrak train because it stops in cities or like small stations or whatever. And sometimes there's like half an hour. It'll stop there while other people are getting on. And there's people set up stalls outside, or they did back then. And I remember there was one with books on it. And I remember just jumping off that train because I'd read all my books. And just buying piles of books off this bookstore. So, yeah.
That's the good thing. Like, because I only really like to read on my Kindle, because then I can't accidentally go on Google.
It's distraction free.
Look at random stuff that has just popped into my head. So, yeah.
Or lately, it's like go on social media. Like if you're reading on the phone, it's so easy to switch over.
Mm.
So I try to avoid that.
I've become obsessed with Reddit recently. Like I could never get into TikTok because I'm not really interested in looking at other people, but on Reddit. Like I can like read people's long stupid opinions and whatever, so it's a little bit addictive. So I need to like put my phone to one side and pick up my Kindle instead.
But it's so easy to like spend an hour on TikTok and you don't even realize it. It's like just keep scrolling.
It's I read an article yesterday and it was you know, it was about phone use and stuff, and and ironically I was reading it on my phone. and they said we spend like 60 days a year on our devices, and they're like, do you really, is that conscious, are you making a choice to do that? And I was like, no. it's really confronting when someone says 60 days a year and you're like, well, that's 2 months. 2 months of the year. So
it's true.
Yeah.
I do try to like always look at my statistics on my phone. It'll tell you like how long you spent on each app, and I do pay attention to that. It's like, oh, okay, we gotta cut that back.
12 hours on Instagram today.
I've never done that.
I mean, me neither, but I feel like maybe you're right, maybe once you start scrolling and then like jump into different things, it just like
it's endless. I think I've actually gone to the extent of sometimes I just delete apps off my phone and then I have to re-download them. So I do that with Twitter because I found I was just, Twitter was too much time. And so that's why I'm not on Twitter as much anymore, because it's just conscious choice to, to not be scrolling on Twitter. You know?
Oh my God, that the hours of doom scrolling last year was too much.
Yeah. That's another thing, because you'll just find what you're looking for, because that's how algorithms work. And
right.
Like, you won't necessarily see the truth. You'll just see what you want to. And who trusts Facebook anyway?
Oh, nobody.
As you shouldn't. They shouldn't. They're dodgy as hell. But too powerful for any of the regulators to do anything about it. So, sorry, that's a bit of my everyday work coming in. I work in data protection. And I'm just like, oh God, how much have they violated? I'm going to stop talking about GDPR because that's really boring and no one cares about it apart from me. never mind. Books.
So do we know whose book is going to be next? Has that been announced or no?
We're not the title's been announced, Stormiko, and I think the blurb should be coming soon. We're going back into San Francisco, but it's not a leopard protagonist. It is, however, a cat of some description. I will give you that clue.
Is it someone we've met before?
One of them you've met and one of them you haven't met. So it is a Psy changeling romance, so a Psy and a changeling. So you've met one of them. You've met the Psy, half of the equation. And
So we wouldn't have met the cat.
Yes, you haven't met the cat. So
I'm like, is it Ivan Merkant because he's gone to San Francisco?
Yes, Suzanne.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh! Whoever guessed it, I was going to say yes. There you go. You just got the biggest spoiler. It's not a spoiler, but there you go. First to know. It's Ivan. Yay. Yeah, because he went to San Francisco. Good. Yeah. Good picking up on that little fact.
Suzanne is on top of it.
Yeah. It's because when I was reading Last Garden, it mentioned that he had gone to San Francisco. I'm like, oh, I hope he pairs up with a changeling. it will.
Your dreams have come true.
But then I couldn't remember any names of the unattached female changelings. So,
well, it's a new one.
Yeah,
so. It's a new one.
Oh, looking forward to that then.
Yeah, that would be so good.
Yeah. I will give you another clue. There's a lot of there's some Easter eggs in this one too, so that relate back to something else. So if you don't know, that's also fine. But I think if you know, like if you've been rereading and you've got that fresh in your mind, you probably find it a bit interesting. Those little things. Yeah. Sort of big, nice. Like it's not gonna affect your reading if you don't remember, but I think for those who have reread recently, it'll be kind of fun.
Nice.
Oh, I love that stuff. It's so good. I get so excited.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited to read that now because I've reread the book with Ivan like in it. Is it Silver Silence he's in? Because he's
Silver Silence.
Yeah. So I've recently spoke to him. Like so that's exciting.
So thank you so much for stopping by the Fangover today and chatting with us about your books, about your writing process. It was so much fun. It's always a good time to sit and chat with you. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. It was really fun. It went by so fast. I think we have to keep chatting for another
time. We'll have to do this again another time.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's been so much fun. I'm now excited to go and finish Archangel's Light.
Oh yes, I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I got to a really good point. I'm like, I need to sign on to Zoom.
It's like I gotta put the book down to go talk to the author of the book.
Damn it.
You can go back to the sexual tension.
Yes.
So thank you guys for listening and sticking with us till the end. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, the special episode that we had for you. And tune in to the podcast every Friday for more paranormal, romance, urban fantasy, and all the things that go bump in the night. You can always find us on thefangover.com, on Instagram at thefangover. You can find me on Instagram at utcbookblog and under thecoversbookblog.com. And you can find, obviously, Nalini Singh. Where can they find you?
So for all info, my website is the best place to go, nalinisingh.com. And while you're there, join my newsletter and you'll get some free short stories set in the world. And I'm also active on Instagram at also Nalini Singh. And Facebook is also at also Nalini Singh. So, yeah. Okay. And sporadically on Twitter at Nalini Singh.
Okay. So thanks very much for joining us, guys. And we'll see you in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.